proceed with the next case, In Re Outboard Marine Corporation. Mr. Keating?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Kevin Keating. I represent the appellant, Travis Boat & Motors, Inc. This case is here on appeal from an order of the District Court, which affirmed two orders of the Bankruptcy Court in the Outboard Marine Bankruptcy. Those orders sustained the trustee's objection to Travis's proof of claim as having been untimely filed, and also denied Travis's motion for reconsideration of that ruling. There have been four issues raised in Travis's appeal. The first is whether a proof of claim sent by facsimile and received by the attorney for the claims agent on the day that was the bar date can be considered as a properly filed claim. As alternative relief, Travis had requested that the court either treat the faxed proof of claim as an erroneously delivered claim that could be treated as timely filed under Bankruptcy Rule 5005C, or in the alternative, as an informal proof of claim. The fourth issue raised was that under Section 726 of the Bankruptcy Code, it is not proper in a Chapter 7 case for a court to disallow untimely filed proof of claims, but that they are simply subordinated to timely filed proofs of claim. With respect to the issue as to whether the proof of claim itself was properly filed, as we indicated in the briefs, there is no case law that we found directly on point, and I don't have anything to add to what's in the brief on that point except to entertain questions. I would like to focus the remainder of my time on the issue of the erroneously delivered claim under Rule 5005, and the informal proof of claim. The elements to satisfy erroneously delivered claim under Rule 5005C is that the claim was intended to be filed with the bankruptcy court, or in this case, the claims agent, since they used an outside company to handle claims, but that it was erroneously delivered to one of the persons identified in that rule, one of which is the attorney for the trustee, which is what happened in this case. There is no dispute that the faxed proof of claim was, in fact, received by the Office of the Attorney for the Trustee on the bar date. And what Rule 5005C provides that where that situation happens, then in the interest of justice, the court may deem the claim as timely filed when it was received by the attorney for the trustee. I believe that the Ninth Circuit case of Anderson Walker versus Lafayette Metals is on point here. In that case, the creditor had sent a letter to the trustee informing the trustee that here's what the amount that the debtor owes me. It was received timely by the attorney for the trustee, and the court held that that was sufficient to satisfy either the requirement of an erroneous delivered claim under Rule 5005, or an informal proof of claim under that equitable doctrine, because the information that the creditor had sent to the trustee contained the necessary information that would have been contained in a properly filed proof of claim form. That's exactly what happened here. There has not been any objection, at least up to this point, that the form of the claim was improper. It used a claim form. It contained the information concerning the amount. It had documentation attached to it. The only issue raised was it wasn't sent to the P.O. box. It was sent to the to the counsel for the trustee. Now, Rule 5005C does include the phrase, in the interest of justice, suggesting there is some discretion on the court's part as to whether to allow an erroneous delivered claim to be deemed timely filed. We think that that standard is met here. The claim's bar date was November 15, 2002. The claim was received on that date. The objection to the claims were not filed until August 2003. Clearly, there was a great period of time in between which the trustees' counsel needed to review all the claims. They indicated there were over 5,000 claims filed, and therefore there was no delay. We did not ask the district court, and we're not asking this court to extend the time for filing the claims, because that would be not allowed under Bankruptcy Rule 3002, which prohibits extension of the bar date in a Chapter 7 case. In addition, as we indicated in the first issue, there is nothing in the instructions that particularly says that you could not fax a claim, although there was no fax number given. There was simply a post office box given on the bar date notice. But counsel for Travis had obtained from counsel for the trustee's office a fax number, and that's where the claim was delivered. So the trustee had all of the information he needed to deal with the claim in a timely manner. The only thing that arguably was missing is that it wasn't sent to the P.O. box as the claim form directive. Now, I know that the trustee has made an argument in his brief that, well, these were simple, unambiguous instructions, and 5,300 other creditors were able to follow them. Why couldn't you? I think that argument is belied somewhat by the fact that in response to the motion for reconsideration below, the trustees submitted an affidavit of a paralegal who was coordinating these claims, indicating that the voicemail box, which was the number contained on the bar date form, that they received over 4,000 calls asking about the proof of claim procedures. Given the fact that there was over 5,000 claims filed and it generated 4,000 inquiries from creditors, suggests that perhaps it wasn't as entirely clear that filing the claim by mailing it to the P.O. box was the only thing that was appropriate.
Well, I don't know what the practical effects would be, but I suppose, given that many, probably a lot of people file them at the last minute or whatever, so there's a place where they all go and they're all gathered. Obviously, they're not all opened on that day, but
right.
I guess that was where they drew the line, say, all right, this pile is here, and that's it. This is what we're going to deal with, and they started opening them. I don't know, really, but I guess that's the practical reason why coming through the transom or some other way isn't good enough.
Yes, but that is why, you know, Rule 5005C provides this alternative method. If you send it to the wrong person, but it's one of the designated persons in the rule, the court may deem it timely. I will save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Okay. Mr. Tobin.
Good morning, Your Honor. Stephen Tobin on behalf of the Outboard Marine Trustee. I'd like to put this in a little bit of context. As Mr. Keating indicated, there were about 5,300 claims filed in the Outboard Marine case, totaling $3 billion. They've now been reduced to about $1.1 billion in the case. Of those 5,300 claims, 113 were late, totaling about $8 million, including the Travis Boat claim. Travis was the only one of these claimants to fax the claim to our office at D'Ancona and Flom. It is totally unclear from the materials they presented, and we look at the affidavit of Mr. Quick and the affidavit of Mr. Keating's co-counsel as to how they got that telephone number, because the process was designed to not have those kinds of conversations with receptionists and secretaries at D'Ancona and Flom. What probably happened is they called the recorded line, and the recorded line said, leave your number, we will call you back, and we would have somebody responsible call them back. And for the most part, the 4,000 calls are not about how to file the proof of claim. They are how much am I getting and when am I going to get it. That's normally what happens when creditors call. But what happened here is Ms. Quick or Ms. Keating's co-counsel hit the zero on the phone and was transferred to a Dancona and Flom receptionist. They asked for a fax number to file a claim, and the receptionist gave them the firm fax number. And that's how this probably happened, I'm guessing, although it's really not clear at all from the materials that were presented to Judge Squires or to Judge Shader.
Say there were 113 late, something like that?
Yes, yes, sir. There's 113 late claims totaling $8 million.
What do you do with those?
They've all been disallowed. Travis Boats is the only one that has taken an appeal. Now, many of those claims, the 113, I would tell Your Honors, that are consumer claims that were not represented by counsel. And we tried to make the claim form, first of all, we tried to make it one page because there was 250,000 listed creditors or parties in interest in the case that it had to be sent to. The second thing is we were very mindful that most of the claimants were consumer claims, so we tried to make it a one-page document, and we did not list in the bar date notice every way that you can't file a proof of claim. We said this is the only way that you can. And when you say a post office box, the only way to get it to a post office box is by mail. You can't fax documents and you can't deliver documents to a post office box. And it was done that way for a reason. So as far as the other creditors seemed to be able to follow the instructions, I think it was a fairly simple claim form, and we were somewhat successful in making sure that we didn't have these problems with anybody else. But I do want to just address a couple of things. The first thing is that the bar date order entered by Judge Barline, who had the case at that point in time, can't be modified or overruled by a secretary at Dancona and Flom answering a telephone inquiry about a fax. There was a court order, and if they wanted to modify the court order as to how to file a proof of claim, they would have to go back before the bankruptcy judge and say, we'd like to fax it instead of mailing it. That wasn't done here. So to say that some receptionist or paralegal or secretary at Dancona and Flom, by giving them a fax number, somehow modified the bar date order, which approved the bar date notice, I think is not a good argument. Second of all, Rule 5005C doesn't apply, and it doesn't apply for one simple reason. The rule is intended to alleviate the problems where an unsophisticated claimant is going to send the claim to the trustee or to the trustee's lawyer, not understanding where to actually file the claim, and it's an erroneous transmittal of a document. This was not erroneous. They picked up a phone, they got a phone number, and they purposefully sent that claim to Dancona and Flom, counsel for the trustee, not counsel for the claims agent, but counsel for the trustee. So this was not an erroneously sent document. This was very purposeful. What happened is the bar date came. It was November 15th. Counsel was in Texas. He said, how am I going to get this claim to a post office box before the bar date? He couldn't figure out how to do it. It couldn't be done physically. And he basically found a way around the bar date order that was ingenious, but certainly they didn't ask counsel for the trustee whether or not will you agree to accept this claim by facsimile. They basically got a phone number from a secretary or receptionist and said, I'm going to get around this bar date order by doing it this way. I don't think that's what the interest of justice requires in this situation. And finally, it can't be an informal proof of claim. I think the law in this circuit is clear. It's different than the law in the Ninth Circuit. The claim has to be filed with the court. The reason for that is you want to let everybody know that there is a claim that's being asserted. Most often that's done by a motion to modify the stay, it's an informal proof of claim, or an objection to something the trustee wants to do. So the claim itself is spread of record and all parties can see what it is. That wasn't done in this case. Second of all, there is no amendment to the claim. What happened here is the informal proof of claim, if you really want to call this proof of claim an informal proof of claim, was followed up by a proof of claim that was mailed to the correct address. That second claim, which would have been the amendment to the informal proof of claim, was disallowed without objection. So there was never an amendment to the informal proof of claim, if that's what they want to call the fax proof of claim. And third of all, it's not an informal proof of claim. It's a formal proof of claim. It's on the proof of claim document. So this does not fall within the informal proof of claim doctrine under the law of this circuit. And if there's anything else, Your Honors, I can
from
answer.
From a practical standpoint, I guess that's the way you get most of these calls. Is there money there to be divvied up?
Yes, there is, Your Honor. And this, I'm somewhat hesitant to answer the court's question only because
I don't need to know how much.
There are people trading in these claims. And when we first had this case, there was a no asset report that went out. Since that time, we've been successful in recovering assets, avoiding claims, recovering preferences, and there's a substantial amount of money at stake here now. And we don't want to make that public necessarily.
Oh, I'm not asking you. I just want to know. It's not zero, in other words.
It is not zero, Your Honor.
Okay.
It is not zero.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I just want to respond to one point that Mr. Tobin made. The explanation that he gave for how it came about that the Travis attorney was able to get...
He speculated.
I don't disagree with his theory. I think that may well be what happened. And it is... And given that situation, we have 113 late claims. We had only one that apparently tried to fax the claim, and again, because they did receive it, they had all the information they needed with it in order to deal with the claim, to object to it if appropriate. I think that it is appropriate for the court to consider it as either erroneous delivered or an informal proof of claim, and I would request that the court reverse the order of the district court. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.